So this is the seventh and final day of this seven-day retreat here at Southern Dharma in June 2013, Unfettering the Natural Mind, the Path of Clear Seeing. We have been most fortunate, because I think in these 7 days we have had the three jewels have been present. We have had just clear, incisive teachings from the treasure finder, Nyingma Dorje. So in that we have had a wondrous presence of Buddha and Dharma. And we have been blessed by Sangha, a very sincere, dedicated, committed, sincere group of people who have come together to support one another in the practice and the realization of the Buddha Dharma. As well as, let us not forget that the Sangha is also the staff of Southern Dharma, who have been incredibly kind and supportive of us over these 7 days, that we could go about our Dharma business unimpeded. And, you know, they just, they fed us, and they watched out for us, and they took care of our little problems, you know, so they definitely are the Sangha, the community, as well as we have had this just marvelous concurrence of weather and climate and nature and water and wind and birds that have just, you know, if we were just always asleep in the Dharma hall and never heard anything, just walking around here, the teachings of just this would be present to us. In days of old, you know, everybody be waiting in the Dharma, in the meditation hall, the Dharma hall, for the master. He or she would come in, sit down, stand up, roll up mat, say, everything has been said, the Dharma talk is completed, and walk out. It has really been like that here. Everything has already been said and understood. So before we deal with any questions that people have or with future practice, let us complete the text. I believe yesterday we ended at the time of arising, thoughts support each other like a chain of friends. At the time of dissolving, they dissolve evenly in the vastness of openness. The ultimate nature of all phenomena is simply this, which is what? Things arise and disappear. Things come together, things part. And that is everything. And the ultimate, you know, we use words like ultimate, and it sounds deep and mysterious and way beyond it. But this truth, you know, that things arise and pass away, that thoughts come together like a chain of friends, and yet upon dissolution, not a trace is to be seen, that's apparent to anybody, right? I mean, anybody who looks can see that. So ultimate, please, it just means in its true nature. and the true nature of things can easily be seen if we take the time to stop and look. If there are any scientists here, we know, and I know nothing about science, but I'm going to make this up. But I think, if you see something that looks solid, right, and you put it under a certain kind of microscope, you can see that it's not solid, right? That it's whatever those things are. I mean, I stopped science in about the 10th grade, so I still probably talk about atoms, right? But isn't that true? It's readily apparent to the eye. That what appears to be a solid thing is really not. It's really a kind of energy, and there's movement, and there's space. So, I mean, so that's apparent to anybody who looks, right? And that's like this. Mindfulness, concentration, these are simply our own kind of microscope, right? Our own kind of magnification that we can look and see the nature of our own mind, phenomena of our own mind, right? As well as we have this intellect that has a capability of, even though things may appear solid, they can very easily be deconstructed just by taking them apart. So, again, do not be put off by words like absolute truth, ultimate truth. As you have heard for 7 days now in the Heart Sutra, form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Form is not other than emptiness, emptiness is not other than form. Which means what? That there's no separation. To go, this is the world of form, this is the world of emptiness. No. You know, it's like saying, the creek and its sound are two different things. There's the creek and its sound. That's not the way it is it? Creek, sound, hearer, same, no difference. So let us move on. Don't pursue the deceitful phenomena which appear through the six senses. During the day or night, whatever activity you engage in, the notion of a doer and a deed is just a confusing illusion. Like a dream or magic. So, don't be put off because he calls all the phenomena that we love deceitful. Right? All phenomena which appear to the six senses means what? Everything. Everything that we see, everything that we taste, everything sound we hear, etc., etc., every thought, feeling, perception, memory, right? All the phenomena that appears to our six senses, don't pursue deceitful. Deceitful what? Means what? Because they appear to us to be what? Solid, real, permanent, right? I look at Jun, I look at Anne, I go, oh, there's Jun, right? And in that moment, they seem like real. They seem like they're always going to be here. Right? This is always Jun, this is always Ann, right? This is always, you know, Charlie's over there, right? And it all looks so solid, doesn't it? It all looks so solid, and we see Ann as Ann, Jun and Jun, right? Isn't that how it appears? And yet the truth is, none of it is solid. None of it is as it appears, right? So do not be deceived by the way things appear to the senses. The senses can only see things as they appear. Is that clear? The senses have no intelligence to them. Right? They can only see the surface. Now, to see phenomena as it really is what? Is not to be deceived. So no longer would we have to call phenomena deceitful, right? If you know someone's a liar, or if you know somebody is given to hyperbole and always exaggerates, right? So when they, you know, when they tell you their latest histrionic fantasy, you just that's interesting. Oh, Chicken Little, the sky is falling again. I see. Yeah. Okay. And you just go about your business. can't be deceived because you know this poor Chicken Little, everything somebody hits it on his head, he thinks the sky is falling. Right? But once we know that's, you know, we're no longer deceived by Chicken Little, right? We don't let Chicken Little disturb us, do we? We do? No. So again, deceitful phenomena is only if we believe it's real. If we believe the lies. But when we know, right? Oh, this person's just a liar. They're just telling me another lie. That's all right. This was a pretty good one. It doesn't mean I'm deceived by them. Okay? Is that clear? This is important. During the day or night, which means all the time, whatever activity you engage in, the notion of a doer and a deed is just a confusing illusion like a dream or a magic. All right. We are attached to what? We are attached to ourselves and we are attached to what we're doing. Right? Deed and doer. Right? I just did a good deed. Right? I just did a terrible thing. Deed and doer. Endlessly. Right? Endlessly reifying a sense of that there's somebody over here doing and over here that there's something done. Right? To call something a deed is to take it out of the ongoing, continuous unfolding and flow of experience and box it in, right? And say, this is what happened, right? But even to say, this is what happened is really to, you know, it's really, this is what is happening. And all that led up to that moment and all that will really flow for that moment is just part of the flow, isn't it? And we don't know where it's going to flow, right? Right? I mean, Jun works in a hospital. She may be a wonderful doctor and have a patient, very difficult, really work very hard, get it right, save their life, right? Then they go home and murder their wife. Right? We don't know, do we? We don't know the results, the true results of our actions, even our ones that seem most altruistic. We don't know. Right? Because things are just unfolding, endless variables, endless unfolding. So that is why we don't attach to the deed. We're only involved that in the moment, as somebody said earlier, my job is to be 100% present and to just do my best in that moment. The results, I don't know. I don't know. Even something that may be benign and look good may turn out not to be. Right? On the other hand, something that may turn out that seems something negative may have positive results. Right? We all know what I'm talking about. So in that sense, we stop grasping at the deed. And then again, as you have been beaten over the head 25 million ways this past 7 days, the idea that there is somebody, a self, an I, that's doing all this is just a complete fabrication. Right? Thoughts, feelings, perception, actions are just unfolding. Endless causes and conditions are moving us this way and that way, all kinds of variables. There's no one entity. There's no self, there's no me, there's no I, there's no Fred that is running this show. That is just the positing of an I, of a self, is a nothing other than a mental fabrication. It is nothing other than a thought. The notion of a doer and a deed is just a confusing illusion. Right? So if you can have an illusion, don't have a confusing one. Right? At least have an illusion that's based on reality. Right? But most of us, even in our illusions, we're confused. Like a dream or magic. Now this is very important. Because this is very important. And this shows you the profundity of this Dzogchen, this great perfection, this Zen view, and how it differs from other practices. Next, the master says, don't try to block appearances. Okay? When we keep our eyes down, what are we doing? We're blocking appearances, aren't we? We don't want to see certain things. Now, I'm not saying that a certain level of training when we're trying to gather the mind and, right? But that is artificial, because that is saying what? To block appearances says that the problem is where? In the world of appearances. That the problem is phenomena. This is known as in Buddhism as the Hinayana, the path of renunciation. Things are bad, so I just what? I just avoid them like the plague. Right? Right. Clothes, nice clothes, bad. Good food, bad. Hair on your head, bad. Money, bad. Relationships, bad. Right? All dangers to my what? To my practice. So, again, because we are deceived by appearances, because we keep getting sucked in and sucked in and sucked in, we're often at a point where we just have to say, I'll avoid. I'll avoid. I'll avoid. I'll avoid. Can you see? And at that level where you really can't help yourself, but go to that, right? Then avoidance is good. Right? If alcohol is something that is uncontrollable for you, it is best what? To avoid it. But again, the problem isn't alcohol, the problem is what? Me. Or and if you believe in the disease, you know, you believe it's my chemistry, you can believe it all kinds of things. But the bottom line is, you know, the problem's here. The problem, alcohol, is just a substance. Right? Is that true? Right. So when we understand that our strategies, our avoidance, are because we believe that we cannot handle that thing. So that is the path of renunciation, that is the path of avoidance. That is the path of control, controlling your environment. Is that clear? This is a different path. This is the path of what? Clear seeing, clear meaning. This, we see the true nature, as he said in the prior, right? We see the ultimate nature of phenomena. We see the empty nature of phenomena. We see there's nothing really inherently there. So what is there to block? Right? Why is it that I can look down at my plate of food, but I can't look it up at the human being across from me? Can somebody give me a good reason? They're all just phenomena to the eyes. Is the problem with the person across from me? Is that the problem? No. The problem is in my own mind. So in this tradition, you see, what are we directly dealing with all the time? Our minds. This is why this is called the direct path, right? Because it goes right to the heart, the source of the problem. What's the source of the problem? Me. And my delusion, my ignorance, my misperception of the nature of phenomena, misperception of the nature of mind, misperception of who and what I really am, right? All that. That's the problem. So this is a path where, again, do not try to block appearances. They are devoid of substantial reality. Is that clear? So that's why this is a path where you're open to everything. We're not picking and choosing. We're not, you know, going through life manipulating and controlling. always got to have incense burning, always got to have New Age music playing, I mean, always got to, you know, have the aromas aroming, you know? And then I'm peaceful. But, you know what I'm saying, can you see the control in that? And the fear in that? Don't try to block appearances. They are devoid of substantial reality. Toward whatever. Again, what is he saying? Whatever. What does whatever mean, Claire? Everything. Let's just clear. Everything. Toward whatever arises, maintain an attitude free of limitation, without judgment or prejudice. At all times and in all situations, maintain the state of alert awareness. All right? Now, please understand, this is the basic attitude. This is the basic view, right? I mean, obviously, you know, I can hear somebody going, but what if you're, you know, don't you sometimes have to judge? You know, I mean, if you're a judge, right? I mean, if you're a judge and that's how you earn your living, then obviously you have to make a judgment. Right? If your job is making assessments, then obviously you have to do assessments. That's your job. We're talking now about what? Just how we move about the world and relate to, you know, the other 95% of phenomena. Right? You know, we don't need the judger, we don't need the assessor, because that is always projecting out onto a reality that is empty and that is perfect just as it is. We don't need to mess with it, right? That sounded pretty good. We don't need to mess with it. That sounds like a good pith teaching. Don't mess with it. It's perfect just as it is. Right? Have we enjoyed the nature of Southern Dharma for 7 days? Did we have to mess with it? No. Moses had to mess with it. Right, he had to be concerned where the water was flowing, which one, right? Because that's what he's paid for. Right? The rest of us, we don't have to mess with it here, do we? We can just, you know, just enjoy it as it is. Do you understand? That's our everyday life. It's just unfolding. Just enjoy it as it is. Deal with it as it is, without judgment or prejudice. At all times, in all situations, maintain the state of alert awareness. So this is, again, you know, when we leave this place of just simple, natural, alert awareness. You know, I think most animals are in a state of alert awareness, right? You know, again, depending on where they are in the hierarchy, they also maybe have some anxieties. So, you know, got to watch themselves. So it's, but I think, but basically, I think animals are just in existence. They're just very awake and alert, right? They're, you know, there's a little outside my, there's a window and there's a nest. And there, I would imagine it's the mother bird sitting in the nest. And she just sits there. Like, she's sort of like us. She's just been sitting there all week. And yet, I know as I walk by, she's very alert. She's very alert. If I walk by, she doesn't move. But if I stop and look at her, she flies away. And, you know, it's not as if her head's moving around that you can, you know, but you know, she's alert. It's like that. If you look at her, she's not tense. You know what I'm saying? She's not tense. She's just sitting there. And it's that kind of capacity, whatever you're doing, at home, at work, shopping, you're learning to cultivate this capacity just to be awake, wakeful, alert, right? the mind isn't always going out and grabbing onto phenomena, whether it's physical or mental. It's just very, you know, and things just can arise. You can let things arise, right? When we move toward, we can encounter flowers and just see them. That's all, and just see them. We don't have to pick them. We don't have to think about them. We don't have to judge them. We don't have to go show everybody else about them. We don't have to tell everybody else about them. Right? We can just have a little intimate moment. Right? Nobody needs to know. It's your secret. Your affair with the flowers. It's a secret affair. Sometimes that's very precious, those little secrets. Just only you know. And you can have lots of that during the day. Just little secret moments of awareness and connection. At all times, in all situations, maintain the state of alert awareness. Yeah, and then he comes, it's like, don't relax your alert attention for even an instant. Okay, so this is, he knows us. He knows us. We'll go, that's great. Yeah. I like that. Maintain a state of alert attention. And he goes on, but I mean for you to do it. Right, Ken? You got to do it. Not even for an instant, because we are so undeveloped, because we are so deluded, and we are so mistaken about appearances, and because it is so easily for us to fall into the world of you know what. He says, don't, because for miserable miscreants like ourselves, when we relax our alert attention for even an instant, you know what could happen. Off the chain. Boom, 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 boom. Right? The drama, the melodrama. So it is for that reason that he says, do your best. Even again, for those of you who are still having dramas and melodramas, even wake up in the melodrama. Just to wake up in the melodrama and go, oh, I'm just caught in a melodrama. I'm just caught in another, drama. Just making a big deal about nothing. And in that moment, you have liberated yourself. Can you see that? In that moment, but you'll only be liberated if you then immediately stop. If you say, oh, I'm lost in a miserable melodrama, and then you continue on, that's stupid, right? I mean, that's like driving along, and let's say you're leaving a day, and all of a sudden, halfway down the road, you realize, I'm on the wrong road. I'm going exactly the opposite direction where I want to go. Oh, so what? I'll just continue. I'm only halfway lost. Why don't I get completely lost? we laugh because it's so ridiculous, and yet we indulge ourselves. So in other words, my friends, when you are driving and you realize you're on the wrong road, what do? We're all sensible people. We stop. We reorient. Right? If we know we're just going the wrong direction, we just turn around and go, or we stop, we check the map, right? We don't keep driving. My Uncle Manny used to keep driving. He was famous in the family. You get the family in the car to go to Maine, and the next thing they know, it's like New York, 20 miles. And even then, he often wouldn't admit he was wrong. And yes, how easily we laugh at the foibles of others. We are not as guilty. It is vital to maintain non-distraction, non-grasping, non-avoidance. So again, very clear instructions, right? For those of you who say, you know, I'm not much of a reader. I mean, I have a, you know, I'm not really Dharma sutras, and you know what I mean? Or, you know, it can't get much simpler, can it? It is vital, maintain non-distraction. Non-distraction means what? See, in this practice, you can, in other words, non-distraction, this is important, because if you think your eyes always have to be down, or you always have to be, you know, when drinking the tea, aware of the cup, but you know what I mean? Like, if you think your practice is always that type of concentration, then anything that takes you off the spot, right, is a distraction. But in this practice, if you are aware and present, anything, you know, you're never distracted because you're always present too. In Zen, it said what? Wherever I shoot the arrow, wherever it lands, I hit the bullseye. If it's all about shooting the arrow, wherever it lands is a hit. But if the hit is only one place, then you know, can you see how narrow that is? So where he's saying, don't be, you know, maintaining non-distraction means stay in that place of awareness where everything you are present to. You're not getting hooked on one thing. Maintain a state of non-distraction, and again, that is. Then he says non-grasping, not avoidance, because if you're not grasping and you're not avoiding, then you are just totally open and alert and present to whatever arises. And there is a saying in Dzogchen, taking confusion as the path, taking distraction as the path. And most people go, what? Or other people might go, hey, that's the path for me. That's the path I've been looking for. Because I am an expert at distraction and confusion. And you're absolutely right. You've come to the right place. Because distraction is only means what? I'm distraction from where I think I'm supposed to be. But wherever I am is where I'm supposed to be. Then, I mean, am I just making word salad? I mean, do you see what I'm saying? Yeah. This is profound. Maintain emptiness and compassion without distraction or striving meditation, always free of effort and struggle. Contemplate the flow of meditative evenness and its subsequent effect. Always free of effort and struggle. Many people, they say, I struggle. And I have struggle inside of me. This part of me is struggling with that part of me. I struggle with life. I struggle with people. Right? Lots of people always, life is a, people even say that, right? How is life? Life is a struggle. Always free of effort and struggle. What is a struggle? It's a fight. What is a fight? Two sides that perceive that they're opposed to each other. In this view, you know, all sides are right. All sides have a place. There's no struggle, right? There's just this and that. They don't have to win or lose, do they? They don't have to fight. Actually, if you put it down, you may see clearly the truth of the situation and quite simply what needs to be done. The struggle, the so-called struggle, and the effort to resolve the struggle is just part of the cloud that covers you from actually being able to act intelligently, wisely, and compassionately in every and all situations, including your situation with how you deal with your inner life. I mean, the struggle has to be between entities. There's no entity inside us. Look. There's nothing there. And if you think there's something there, as soon as you look at it, it will disappear. Now, how can two non-entities that have no true reality struggle with each other? That's a cartoon. That's not real. Right? I mean, we can enjoy cartoons, but they're not real. They're for children. And yet we watch this play of our mind, this says this and this says that and back, and we're entranced by it. And we think it's somehow meaningful and intelligent. Is that clear? Just stop it. Not stop it, but stop our living in this way. Always free of effort and struggle. Right? Right now, well, as it was said last night, right now, do you hear me? I mean, hear me in the physical sense. Do you hear me? Is that taking great effort to hear? No, it's effortless. Do you see me? It's effortless. Huh? I mean, everything is like that. Just respond to situations effortlessly. Trust your true, your true mind. Trust your own natural spontaneity to deal with things. Contemplate the flow of meditative evenness and its subsequent effect. So I think what he's saying here, contemplate is a little different than meditate. So contemplate sort of is kind of reflect on. So, as you're practicing, kind of beginning to develop this awareness of effortless and struggleless living, the natural arising and passing away of phenomena, the presence of pristine awareness always here, as you contemplate these things and how it just flows along evenly, and how the effect of it in our life and our relationships is so profoundly different than when we were in that world of effort and struggle. He says, reflect on that, contemplate that, and notice, to notice if things are a little better, if life is a little easier, if you feel a little better. Right? As somebody said, I think it was Michael, right? I feel relaxed. You know what I mean? So it's like notice these things, right? I mean these are the things to contemplate. Since I've been, I do this, I let go of that, the world didn't come to an end. Huh? I thought I had a big issue, I thought I had this unresolved issue from my father, even though he's been dead for 40 years. I thought I had this unresolved issue from my father, and I just let it go. And everything's fine. It was what it was. To think that we need to resolve things is to see life as a series of events, all of which have to be properly packaged. Life doesn't have to be packaged. Life just flows. Life is to be lived. The practice is the longed-for essential meaning of all classes of Tantra, Dharma, the vital essence of the Dharma. So again, he's referring to this whole body of practice that he has given us in this treasure text. He says, he calls it the longed-for essential meaning. So that's a wonderful, because longing is something of the what? Of the heart, isn't it? So he's saying this practice is responding to that longing that is often not deeply felt, not really understood. But I think that there is nobody here in this room who at some level doesn't have it. There's some longing. You know, whether it's longing to be free, a longing to know who and what you really are, a longing for a deep, meaningful connection, longing for wholeness. You know, these are just words, right? But he's just saying there is this sense of something missing, even if life is good. Right? Even if you get the, you know, you got the advertisements, you got, doesn't get any better than this, right? Good friends, good food, good wine, money in the bank, right? Doesn't get any better than this, right? Even with all that, when it's all over and you wake up the next day, there is still something, even though it's all here, supposedly, there's always a sense there is something missing, something not quite complete. Right? Do you know what I'm talking about? He knows it, and that doesn't mean, you see, in our society, what we're told about that is, you know, what are we told?
Buy more stuff.
Yeah. Take that energy and, you know, you need more. You know, what else people say to you? You need new goals and objectives in your life. Right? Come on. Right. You need a hobby. That's your problem. You need a hobby. Why don't you take up golf? I live in Florida. That's what people would talk down there. Why don't you take up golf? You know, work on your tennis game. This practice is the long for essential meaning of all classes, is the essence of Dharma. It is the soul's secret exposition of the view, meditation, and conduct. It's the whole thing. It's how to see things, it's how to practice, and how to conduct oneself. I mean, that's life. I better get going here. So we're just at the end. Now he's just finishing up. He says, the fortunate ones with good karma must do this practice. Then the good qualities of the stages in the path will develop and increase. This is the distillation of the essence of Dzogchen. It will be a friend to the fortunate ones who come later. So here he's talking about the fortunate ones with good karma must do. And he's talking to all of us who hear, you know. I mean, he's talking to us, right? Because we are the ones with the good fortune, with the good karma, right? That we have been able to receive these teachings. And not only to receive them, we didn't receive them just in a book. We were able to receive them live. We were able to listen to them. We were able to receive them in a retreat environment, right? Where not only could we receive them in a living way, but we could practice them. We could, in the stillness of silence and in the beauty of nature, we could, you know what I'm saying? So he's talking about us. How fortunate we are, right? We must do this practice. And he really says for two reasons. So that all the good qualities, which means all, you know, the result of all this is not, please understand, you know, it's like when people talk about, you know, their meditation and their practice. You know, it's like Buddhism isn't about practice and meditation. Buddhism is about waking up. Buddhism is becoming a good human being. Right? I mean, that's what it's about. It's not about, you know, how you're, you know, how good a meditator you are, how good your concentration is. Right? This isn't competitive, a competitive sport. I mean, people talk this way. I'm sure no one here does. You know, this is about our life. Our practice is our life. Life is practice. Practice is life. Right? So he's saying, from doing this practice, how will you know you're doing this practice, successfully, correctly? Because all the good qualities that come from the path will develop and increase within you. And secondly, it will be a friend to the fortunate ones who come later. So this again is that bodhisattva path, right? That even though in a certain way, snapshot, we might go, wow, what a bunch of self-indulgent narcissists we are, right? Here we are, we get away from everybody, leave our families, leave our jobs, leave the newspapers, we don't even know what's going on in the world, what's the latest tragedy or suffering, how selfish we are, right? Going off alone and just indulging ourselves with these meditations, right? Can you see the snapshot? But there's a bigger context. Because the bigger context, of course, is this is a process where we are developing, we are learning, we are developing, we are actualizing, so we can, when we do engage in the world, we will no longer be those who just contribute to the perpetuation of the delusion, the ignorance, and the suffering of this world. Right? There are enough people doing that. Right? We would like our contribution to this world to be much more meaningful, much more hopeful, much more beneficial. So he says, this teaching, these practices, will be a friend to the fortunate ones who come later. What preserves these teachings generation after generation? Only people who are willing to practice it, right? Otherwise, it's a dead book, and people will pick it up, and there'll be nobody be able to tell them what it means, right? Right? If you gave this text to most of the people you know in your life, and you can love them, they're all good people, I'm not saying that, and you gave them this text to read, what would they say to you? What is this nonsense? Or after about 3-4 paragraphs, they put it down. What is this? Right? Okay. So it is not only the words, but the capacity of people who have taken the time to contemplate, to study, to practice, and to realize that will make sure that these teachings and practices of the direct path to Buddhahood and liberation will be available to future generations. We don't want it to die with this one, right? So that is also why we practice it. And then he says, you protectors of the treasured doctrines must guard these doctrines well. You vow keepers, these have got various classes of beings, including ourselves, must protect these teachings as if they were your child. You will see the face of Samanta Bahadra, the primordial purity of your own awareness. So he's just a little stronger. And then he adds a very interesting thing. I kind of really like this one. And then just before he closes, after he said all this wonderful stuff, he says, it is never appropriate to show these teachings to scholars who are addicted, and I'm not sure how you pronounce this word. Is it ratiocination? Ratio? R-A-T-I-O-C-I-N-A-T-I-O-N?
Ratiocination.
Is that a guess or do you know it? Rash, So it's rash, not rat.
Ratiocination,
and you would define that as?
Thinking
logically, okay. So then, after the end of this incredibly wonderful teachings and all that, he says, it is never appropriate to show these teachings to scholars who are addicted to ratiocination and, listen to this one, point scoring. How did he know what goes on in academia? It's just unbelievable. But again, I think the point is what? There are those, and we know them, who will appropriate the most profound wisdom and turn it into what? Intellectualization and another form of ego boosting, right? Another kind of empty intellectual, as he calls it, point scoring. Look how much I know about Buddhism. Look, you know what I mean? And that's what he's talking about. So he's warning us about them. Like, don't you dare show this text, this secret treasure of mine, which I've now shared with you. If I find out that you've ever dared to show it, okay? So, but again, I think he's also he's warning us about a point within ourselves, right? Let us not go home and kind of point out the faults of other practitioners and let them know that we are now practicing the direct path of Dzogchen, and you know what I'm saying, and all intellectual knowledge. That is not real knowledge, it's just concept knowledge, and when that is wedded with a big, fat ego, well, I think you understand. Then he says, which I think is quite wonderful, they are sealed in emptiness. Okay. So he's saying after that, but in a certain sense, don't worry about the essence of this teaching. They are sealed in emptiness, right? You know, that's the magic seal. That's the samaya, right? They are sealed in emptiness. The truth of them cannot be seen only to those who open the seal of emptiness. And that cannot be opened intellectually. That can only be opened experientially. So in a certain sense, he says, even though these people may do all kinds of things, they will never, don't worry, the treasure is safe, but it is sealed in emptiness. And then there are a few more final lines, and then it says, this text was revealed by Nyudun Dorji Drupin Lingpa at the holy place of Kangzong in North Tibet. And it was written down at Machik Lobron's pilgrimage place by Zangri Kamar. And this is the end of this holy text. Been around Tibetan Buddhists, you will always see them do a very interesting thing with anything related to Dharma, which is they will always first put it on their head. So if you gave somebody a Dharma book, first thing they do is put it on their head, because in their world, the head is the highest and the feet are the lowest. So because they so respect anything to do with Dharma, you could give them a little piece of a piece of something. You could give them a text, you can give them a Buddha image, you can give them a piece of a Buddha image, a broken shard of a Buddha image. And if you hand it to them, they know that they'll put it on their head first. So So I have made copies of this text for everyone, and I have put it in a folder. See, this is also something interesting, and I'll just share it with you. In traditional Buddhism, it's like a Tibetan culture, because anything to do with Dharma, and I mean anything, is respected and considered an element of the truth that has the power to liberate. And because it is deeply respected, you always treat anything to do with Dharma respectfully, right? So you would never, never put anything to do with Dharma on the floor. Or you would never, have your Dharma teaching, and rest some flowers on it, right? You would never do that. Why? Because this is the truth. This has the power to liberate. All the wisdom and understanding all together is in anything related to Dharma. So you always treat it respectfully. Okay? When Carol was kind enough to make copies to give to everybody, and she gave them to me, and I thought about giving them out to you, I went, uh-oh. If I give them out to them in the meditation hall, and then they'll just put it down on the ground. So then I said, Carol, could we find manila folders? But of course, we could put the manila folders, but at least it's not touching. So this may sound a little silly, but it's really something about the heart. So and again, it really says, you know what I mean? If we kind of mix all our books on the bookshelf, the fiction, the nonfiction, the Dharma, the self-improvement, the metaphysical, you know what I'm saying? Everything is mixed. Nothing has meaning. But when you think something is precious, right? Right? So maybe... maybe more to women than men, but if you have a lot of jewelry, right, and a lot of it is just costume jewelry or whatever, but you have a couple of things that are really quite valuable, right, quite special, quite rare, you probably don't mix it in with the same, with all the junk, right? You have it in a special case, so you see, be right, because it's special, it's precious. Right? It's like that, you see. It's not a false thing. It's like, yeah. Or it's like, I mean, if you have something beautiful in your house, a beautiful piece of pottery or a sculpture or something that's meaningful to you, usually you put it out, you display it in a special place, right? You don't just, right, and you I don't need to believe. You understand what I'm saying? So it's like that. So it's like having that same kind of feeling about the Dharma, and therefore, even though we might say this is just words on a piece of paper, but those words are the words that you've been listening to all week. Right? Those are words that have the power to liberate one. So they are worthy to be careful with. And I realize, that is why I have this little bench here. When I first began teaching, I didn't have a little bench like this. And used to always bother me because when I came in with my Dharma text to read, when I wasn't doing it, I'd have to put it on the ground. It's not like bad things are going to happen to me or a finger is going to come out of heaven and judge me. I mean, it's not anything like that. It's not that childish. It's just that, this is the most precious. Please treasure it. We have to. What are we doing here?
At 11, we have closing service.
So, all right, so let's. There are not too many here, so I think we can do this quickly. Okay, to take a photo of the painting over the altar? Yes. Is there somewhere to get a reproduction of it? No, this is an original. I actually had this, I commissioned this when I was in Tibet from a painter in Lhasa. He was a wonderful painter. I met him through a Tibetan friend. I told them, traditionally, typically with these kind of things, it's not like you go to the store and pick one out. Usually you commission one, because usually they're related to certain practices you're doing or what you want. So traditionally you would go to an artist and you would tell them what to paint. So through this Tibetan friend of mine who lived in Lhasa, I met this really wonderful artist, and I asked him to make this, would he make this tanka for me? He said he would. I paid him some money, I gave him my address, and to be honest with you, I didn't ever think I'd see it. And lo and behold, you know, 3, 4, 5 months later, in the mail, comes the tanka. I mean, it was all rolled up in a van frame. But you can take a picture, and this is Padma Sambhava. Padma, lotus Sambhava sprung from. This is Padma Sambhava, the one who brought the teachings, the Vajrayana teachings, from northwest India to Tibet. Padma Sambhava. And he brought the Dzogchen teachings. And this is him in his rainbow body. The form that is no form. What about sacrificing animals and plants for scientific research? Again, you know, the mindfulness trainings are to be encountered and engaged with. So I imagine somebody is saying this because in the carrying out often of scientific research, I guess life is taken. Am I right? But because we, again, this is a whole Dharma talk, so I really don't have time, but obviously, as opposed to some people who have endless rationalizations, yes. And again, I mean, I won't go into plant life, because the kind of life that is or whatever is very different, since we do eat those all the time. But I would say, generally, whatever life, animal or plant, it is life. And we should always approach the taking of life with great respect, because we are taking life. Right? Whether it's the life of an insect, the life of a cockroach, the life of a mouse, or the life of a plant, there is a taking of life. And so it's always good to do it with that kind of awareness. And if you definitely are having to take life, to do it with a sense of regret. Right? Again, obviously, we've talked before, obviously sometimes to protect society, protect people, life has to be taken. Sometimes to maintain the hygiene of our house, insect life or even animal life may have to be taken. Again, always do it with a sense of regret. You know, when you get into research, obviously, are there other alternatives? Right? Are there other alternatives? Are there just no other alternatives? And I guess the other thing is, and again, I don't do this kind of research, so I'm, this is not from personal experience. Of course, beside are there other ways to get to the same information? I guess the other thing would be, how really important is this research I'm doing? Is it worth taking a life of somebody? Right? I think that's an interesting question. But these are good questions. Good. I can move from the state of mind that grasps at thoughts to the state of mind that is open and free. I've not been able to simply look at a thought or feeling and have it disappear. What am I missing? So I think the question here is saying, I can kind of do one, or I can do one or the other, right? I mean, I can be in the mind that's endlessly grasping at thoughts, right? Or I can sort of be in this other state which is very open and free, and that's good too. But I find it hard to be, to kind of combine them. I think what this question, So the person is saying, I wanted to look at a thought or a feeling and have it disappear. I'm not quite sure what's being said here, because Charlie, it was you.
It was me.
I
Feel
freedom to move from state to mind and realize the unreality of the others or the vice has to get caught. I feel mobility. But like last night, we were going through a meditation in which we entered our body and tried to feel the formlessness of the body as much as possible, and then open our eyes, and then whatever thought came up, look at it, and you said it should disappear. I took that literally. And it just, it did, at that moment, it just didn't seem...
What did it do?
It just would, it would remain, and I would have to...
Like, give me an example. What kind of thought? Give me an example of a thought.
Okay.
How about, my name is Charlie, and I'm asking a question. Okay, could you just think that? Okay. Now what's happening?
No, nothing's happening.
Oh, the thought, hold on, stop, slow down. You mean the thought disappeared?
Yeah.
Wasn't that what you want to happen? Charlie?
Yes.
Don't.
It was a thought about an action I took, taking that I regretted.
Okay, I regretted chopping off that guy's head. How about that one? Would that be an action you might regret?
Yes.
Okay, please, in your mind, say, I regret having chopped off that man's head. Okay? Now what? Where's that thought? Are we clear? There's nothing to do, Charlie. Your problem is you still think you gotta do something. And you're in charge. You're not in charge. Relax. Just let them be. Right? When you are lost in a thought, you are not aware. Right? As soon as you become aware of the thought, immediately it disappears because the thought cannot maintain itself because its nature is just to disappear, to arise and disappear. It is only the chaining that maintains it. As soon as you bring awareness, it just disappears. You don't have to do anything. You just got to stop doing something. But if you start thinking, I got to do something here, that is called you are making effort. And that effort will produce more thoughts. And even that thought, I got to do something here, is a thought. Once again, you are, you know, as Master Bonke said last night, what? Washing away the blood with more blood. It's going to be messy. Are we clear? Good. Please recommend frequency and duration of meditation practice are the teachings you've been reading from in Dharma Talks available in a book. And yes, this book is called Being Right Here, a Dzogchen treasure text. This is where I took the text from. This text, for some reason, is not available on the internet. I don't know why. But it is in this, and let me just, I highly recommend this book. It is by an Englishman by the name of James Lowe. He is a long-term practitioner of Dzogchen. I don't know him personally, but he was his teacher, C.R. Lama. You know, in Tibetan Buddhism, they have these reincarnations. His teacher was actually the fourth incarnation of Nyingma Dorje. So he studied with the incarnation of Nyingma Dorje, and obviously was given this text as something to practice. We heard his teacher comment on, teach it many times. And so not only is the text in here, but a very insightful, intelligent, from a traditional way, but also he also is a psychotherapist in England, and so I think it's Being Right Here, a Dzogchen treasure text is where you can find the text. Well, of course, you're all going to have the text, but also it's a very good commentary. And finally, recommend frequency duration of meditation practice. You know, again, as you have learned, we need to stop seeing our practice as meditation practice, but as life practice, all right?
Okay.
And again, even if you practice 2 hours a day, that's a lot, right, for a layperson. Even if you could practice 2 or 3 or 4 hours a day, still the other 12 or 14 are still going to be the major part of your life. So knowing that, please understand that your main practice is your capacity to keep this mind fresh and alert and free, etc., etc. I won't say it anymore, all day in every situation. Now, obviously, formal meditation, like we have done here over retreat, is a time to kind of bring it all together and be very much more focused than usual. You know, I would say do as much as you can, but do it quality and not quantity. As you've learned in the Dzogchen tradition, even if you're going to sit an hour, you may break that up into, you know, 5 and 10 minute short periods, even though you're sitting there for one time. Okay, but generally, I would say you want, even though, you know, generally not every meditation is a good meditation. Sometimes it goes this way, sometimes it goes that way, sometimes it flows, sometimes it doesn't. You know, that's just the nature, I mean, you know, that's just the nature of things. But generally, you want to approach your meditative practice as something that's very alive and very meaningful, right? And that's something that is enjoyable to you. If you are approaching it like a task, like it's, you know, like there are other things in life that you may do which you know are good for you, but you really hate doing them, you know, that is not the way to approach meditation, right? Because you won't, you know, you will find it difficult to do, you'll endlessly find the excuses, right? Why not to do it? Everything else get in the way, you know what I'm talking about, right? So it is better, you know, to commit yourself to 15 minutes of quality meditation, where you do just like we do here. You sit down, you don't just jump into it, you really establish yourself in mindfulness, you're really clear about establishing presence in yourself, you're not, you know, going to attend to all the endless phenomena that's going on in your life, you're really, you know, better to do it 10 or 15 minutes a day like that, you know, than sit 45 minutes every day of, you know, of which you're just planning your day. Right? Sitting with your legs crossed on a cushion in front of the Buddha, planning your day, is not meditation. Is that clear? I'm sorry, June, I had to say it. It's not meditation. It's not Dharma practice. It's worldly practice, right? If you need time to go over your lists, please do it before or after you meditate. You know, some people say, oh, but you know, when I meditate, then I can really remember everything I got to do. I won't comment on that one. So, my friends, where are the texts? Now, when you see me do this, you won't think strange thoughts. So it is now 5 of 11. Yes.
Where, how do you get that book?
You order it. Yeah, it's available.
You order it from
Snow Lion, Snow Lion Press, which is a major Buddhist press. Yes.
You can order on this website, and it helps support this. Yeah. Teachings us.
Right. So anyhow, yeah, James Lowe or Being Right Here. I would imagine if you put in the name of the text, the Mirror of Clear Meaning, it would probably bring you to his website. Because again, it was very unusual, but when I wanted to you know, bring a copy for everybody, I couldn't. It, for some reason, he has not made, even on his own website, he has not made it available. So you really can, I mean, Angie was kind enough to type it out for us. So, yeah, so probably if you just put in the name of the text. So we will end now, take a short break, reset up as in our deep sharing, and why don't everybody come up and I'll give you a copy, please. Don't put it on the floor, maybe take it back in the break and put it with your belongings. So thank you.